U.S. economy added jobs last month, but the pace of gains is slowing.
The fact that we still added 250,000, that's typically a very healthy gain. The concern, of course, though, is that, you know, we still have about 10 million jobs to make up from the spring's losses.
And we head to Georgia, where President Trump will hold a post-election rally on Saturday.
We have this extraordinary situation where we have two Senate runoffs. So we have two senators, Republican senators, who are up for re-election for complicated reasons. And if they were to lose, then the Democrats would take control of the U.S. Senate.
Plus, how Mariah Carey's become the queen of Christmas. It's Friday, December 4th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. U.S. job growth is slowing as a surge in coronavirus cases across the country leads to new restrictions on businesses. Employers added just 245,000 jobs last month, less than half that added in October. The unemployment rate fell slightly to 6.7%, due in part to more Americans giving up the job search. The U.S. economy has now regained a little over half of the 22 million jobs lost during the pandemic, but more Americans are seeing temporary layoffs become permanent. Joining me now to talk more about the November jobs report, the last we'll see before the new year, is Wall Street Journal reporter Eric Morath. Hi, Eric. Thanks for joining me.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
So, Eric, we're in the holiday season, and that's reflected in this report. Which sectors are hiring right now, and which, conversely, are we seeing have some trouble spots here?
I mean, I think this report was heavily influenced by the holiday hiring and how that's really changed. We saw that transportation and warehousing, which is a good proxy for Amazon and UPS and others that are getting holiday gifts to your doorstep, that was responsible for almost half of the jobs added last month. But retailers, which, you know, have traditionally staffed up in November, decreased jobs. So we're not seeing the traditional mall hiring going on to nearly the same level. But a lot of that's being replaced and offset by e-commerce hiring.
We have also been seeing signs of an overall slowdown in recent weeks. What are the expectations for the rest of this month and heading into 2021? What are some of the key challenges to the recovery?
Yeah, I mean, one of the big challenges is, frankly, the weather. You know, restaurant jobs had, after being decimated this spring, had added one out of every three new jobs through October was a restaurant job. And then last month, restaurant jobs declined. And I don't see a real strong path for restaurant jobs to pick up until either the spring when folks can start dining outside again or until a vaccine is widely available.
Now, the economy is still adding jobs and the unemployment rate ticked a little bit lower. Can you tell us some more about the bright spots here?
Yeah, I mean, so continued progress is important, right? I think it's good to note that we are still in an economic recovery. We're not in a recession or a double dip recession. And so we should have some confidence. A month ago, there was worries that this report would show a decrease in jobs. The fact that we still added 250,000, that's typically a very healthy gain. The concern, of course, though, is that, you know, we still have about 10 million jobs to make up from the spring's losses.
That's The Wall Street Journal's Eric Morath. Eric, thanks so much for joining me.
Sure. Happy to join you.
The sharp decline in job growth last month is spurring action on Capitol Hill as lawmakers negotiate another round of coronavirus relief. Members of both parties pointed to the report as evidence that quick action is necessary. Several aid programs are set to expire at the end of the year. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
We had some not so good news on the job front that further necessitates our taking action.
Lawmakers are currently negotiating on the details of a $908 billion bipartisan proposal. It includes a $300 weekly unemployment supplement. Optimism over stimulus talks restarting boosted U.S. stocks today. All three major indexes ended the day higher. The Dow notched its second close over 30,000. The Nasdaq also closed at a new high. All three indexes gained at least 1% for the week. The U.S. continues to exceed grim milestones, setting a new high in the number of coronavirus infections this week, which were at 217,664 on Thursday, according to Johns Hopkins University. Deaths also hit a new high for the second day in a row at 2,879. Hospitals across the nation are strained, now caring for more than 100,000 COVID-19 patients. They are currently filling an estimated 1 in 4 ICU beds. President Trump will hold a rally in Georgia on Saturday ahead of two crucial Senate runoffs next month that will determine control of the chamber. We'll talk about why the state's Republican Party is split ahead of the president's post-election rally after the break. Georgia, a state that flipped blue in the presidential election, is turning out to be a pivotal battleground for control of the Senate, and that's making it a focal point for politicians and donors on both sides of the aisle. On Saturday, President Trump is holding a post-election rally in southern Georgia. The event is intended to support the two Republican incumbents fighting to hold on to their seats, but there are questions about whether his appearance will help their chances. Joining me now with more details is Wall Street Journal reporter Cameron McWhorter. Hi, Cameron. Thanks for being here.
Glad to be here.
So the focus is on Georgia now for several reasons. Let's start with an update on where we are regarding the Trump team's challenges to the election results in that state and how that's played out.
Well, there is a second recount underway in which we had a giant, unprecedented hand recount of all the votes, which showed that out of almost 5 million votes cast, President-elect Biden won narrowly in this state, which was the first time a Democratic candidate for president has won in this state since 1992. And now we're having another recount, which the Trump campaign has requested, and that is now underway. There have been some legal challenges here thus far that have not gone anywhere. So that's where we stand. It's all wildly complicated by the fact that we have this extraordinary situation where we have two Senate runoffs. So we have two senators, Republican senators, who are up for re-election for complicated reasons. And if they were to lose, then the Democrats would take control of the U.S. Senate.
Now, given that backdrop, Vice President Mike Pence is in Georgia today, and President Trump is heading there for a rally on Saturday. That's occurring as there's infighting among the Republican Party. Tell us more about what's going on there, Cameron.
I've been here since 2003, and I have witnessed being here the collapse of the Democratic Party. Like, they really just fell apart here, and the Republicans surged. And today, the Republican Party controls both chambers of the legislature. They control every statewide office, including the governor's office. So they dominate the state. And there was really no discussion of this state was in play. There'd always be, so the Democrats sort of say that, but in previous elections, President Obama with Hillary Clinton's campaign, they came down here basically to raise money and then they'd leave. So that has, with the growth of Atlanta, with people moving here, from younger people, minority groups moving to this state, and Atlanta swelling, and the work of Stacey Abrams, a Democratic activist and politician here, it has really changed the game. And obviously, because now Joe Biden just won. And this has unleashed what I guess I would describe as a civil war among Republicans. There's this, you know, been a longstanding coalition here of Tea Party and social conservatives coupled with institutional sort of mainstream Republicans. And that coalition has dominated here, and it is now tearing itself apart. They are at each other's throats.
So how are Republicans in the state reacting ahead of Trump's planned visit this weekend?
I think the Republican leadership in this state, the political strategists in this state, are biting their nails. They are very terrified. This president has proven over and over and over and over again that when he gets in front of a microphone, he's going to say whatever comes to his head, whatever he wants. And any attempt at corralling him or getting him on message, as they like to say, is pretty much a hopeless cause. So they want him to come tomorrow and talk about how great the two Republican senatorial candidates are and why they should be reelected. They don't want him to go off attacking the election process in Georgia or other Republicans in Georgia, which he has been doing on Twitter and in video statements recently, attacking the governor, attacking the secretary of state, who are both ardent supporters of his to this day. So they don't want that message. Some supporters of the president have advocated not voting in this runoff as a way to show their disapproval for how the election was handled.
We're also reporting this week that the Trump campaign raised an enormous amount of money for political committees and the Republican Party, $207.5 million. Much of it's going to his court battles challenging the election. How is that playing out in Georgia?
How much of that is going to end up in these runoff races? I assume some of the money is going to end up over here for that. But I can tell you the amount of money, regardless of what President Trump raised in that, the amount of money pouring into the state right now is unprecedented. And we are probably going to be looking at north of $500 million spent in Georgia alone by super PACs of all political stripes and both the Republican and Democratic efforts. I mean, it is extraordinary. And so if you turn on your television here in Georgia, it is nonstop negative ad, positive ad, back and forth. It's very comical, actually. If you turn on your radio, you know, there's ads. If you turn on streaming service, there's ads. If you open up your phone, there's text messages. Your doorbell rings and there's people knocking on your door. So it is an extraordinary effort to get every voter, both sides realize this is a base turnout election, getting everybody they can to the polls. This saturation, I don't know what the end result's going to be. It might just be that basically the presidential race has just continued here in Georgia. We have not seen an end to it. It's just the same thing. And the president certainly, with his arrival and with his comments recently, has made himself front and center. So if the November 3rd election was a referendum on his presidency and he lost in Georgia, Democrats have hope that January 5th will be a referendum on him as well. The Republicans hope that because of November 3rd and the anger that it's instilled in certainly a portion of their voting group, that that will bring them victory on January 5th. But we'll see. Anyone who says they know what's going to happen here is wrong, because nobody does. I've never seen anything like this. And this is, again, this is the deep South. This is the solid South. This is a Republican state. That's has been the truth. And now we're heading into a zone where I don't know where we are. Are we going to about to become Virginia, which is now blue, or are we about to become North Carolina, where it goes back and forth? But this will be transformative in how American presidents are elected going forward.
Certainly a lot to keep an eye on in Georgia in the next few weeks. The Wall Street Journal's Cameron McWhorter, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
And finally, there are Christmas songs and there are Christmas classics. Mariah Carey's 1994, All I Want for Christmas Is You, is definitely the latter. The song was streamed 309 million times on demand last year, the most of any streamed holiday song. That helped push it to number one on Billboard's all-genre Hot 100 songs chart, making it the first Christmas song to do so in 60 years. For Mariah, that song is just the tip of her holiday empire. Our entertainment reporter John Jurgensen says she's built a brand around Christmas with albums, videos, books, and even an animated movie for kids.
She really has not ever held back about leaning into Christmas. You know, there was a time, especially when she recorded this song in the 90s, that, you know, Christmas music was thought of as kind of something for artists who were over the hill and washed up in their career and didn't have anything else to offer. So it was kind of risky for her to even record that album at, you know, when her career peak was still rising. So I think it's been pretty interesting just to see like how she has been unabashedly pro-Christmas at every point in her career and really just doubled down on it and, you know, owned it as a big part of her, you know, her identity as an artist. A lot of artists would be kind of hesitant to do that, you know, and trying to make sure it didn't overshadow the rest of their music, but she's never held back with that too. So I think that's a pretty cool thing, even if not everyone's on board with it necessarily, people who she calls Scrooges.
This year, she is making another big play, Mariah Carey's Magical Christmas Special, which premieres tonight on Apple TV Plus's streaming service. It'll be followed by a new soundtrack album, including a new song featuring Ariana Grande and Jennifer Hudson. And of course, the queen of Christmas herself, Mariah Carey. We've got more on her Christmas business on our website, WSJ.com. And that's what's news for this week. Our hosts are me, Anne-Marie Fertoli, and Mark Stewart. The show was produced this week by Trine Nori and Sam Westren, with help from Jenny Ang, Kateri Yoakum, Amanda Llewellyn, Charlie Turner, J.R. Whalen, and Chris Sinsley. We'll be back on Monday morning. Thanks for listening.